Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 182. I'm recording it on Thursday, October 15th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 19. That's less than exciting for stock investors. The music for this podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Plain Loafer. The title of the podcast is Take Back the Internet. The title, of course, comes from the saying. I think it was a 60s saying. It was certainly a feminist saying. Perhaps it was a 70s saying. Take back the night. And I intend down the road, I don't have it today, but I intend to have a separate section of my website entitled Take Back the Internet, because this is an important initiative. It's an initiative I certainly did not seek out. It's the farthest thing from my imagination when I put up my first post to the Motley Fool board in May of 1999. But this initiative is very, very important in my estimation, and in the estimation of a lot of other people, some of those smarter people than me, I think. And so I believe in time, this is going to go somewhere. I wish that it would go somewhere tomorrow, but my sense is that it's not going to go somewhere tomorrow, but I think it will go somewhere down the road. And it's going to be hard to fit everything in one podcast. Perhaps I'll have to do more than one, but I'm going to try to do a survey and then return to it at later times. But the issue here is, you've probably often heard me say that honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and on other important investment topics is banned on the internet. And that's a strange thing to say. How could, first of all, the internet is so big, and secondly, the internet is sort of known for allowing speech. How could it be banned? And third, how could a topic so important as safe withdrawal rates, which are the numbers that middle-class investors use to plan their retirements, how could such a thing be banned? This is a bizarre, it truly is a bizarre claim. It's true. It's a true claim, friends and neighbors. You can check it out. But it's bizarre. It's the most, the story that I have been involved in over the course of the past 7 years, and the good side of the story I refer to as the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate, and that's the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate is the most controversial series of investing discussions ever held on the internet, and those conversations have borne tremendous fruit, and the fruit are the podcast and the articles and the calculators and the blog entries at my website. But there's another side to the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. There's a dark side, and the dark side I call the Campaign of Terror. And the Campaign of Terror is an effort by a group of extremely abusive posters who happen to be passive investing dogmatics and who do not want the weaknesses of the passive investing model revealed to other middle-class investors, and who have engaged in just, you know, off the charts abusive behavior to block honest posting. Now, I guess I need to say, when I say honest posting is banned on the internet, I certainly don't mean to say there are no honest posts on safe withdrawal rates or on other valuation related topics. Of course there are honest posts. There are honest posts every day, you know, probably thousands of them if you counted everything on the internet every single day. So I don't mean to say that all honest posting is banned. However, there's a line that cannot be crossed. And I crossed that line. And the way I crossed that line was, I said, this was on May 13th, 2002, I said at the Motley Fool discussion boards, we had a board called the Retire Early Board, and we built that up primarily me. I don't mean to say I was the only one. There were thousands of people all contributing. But I was the primary, I was the driver, and we built that up into the most successful board in the history, well, at that time, in the history of the Motley Fool site. They may have bigger boards today that I don't know about. A hugely successful board. And this was, I mean, you know, it was by intent. I had, the board was started by a fellow named John Graney, and he's the leader of the Campaign of Terror. John and Mel Lindauer are the two leaders. John is the owner of the retireearlyhomepage.com website. You can check out John's stuff there. And Mel is the co-author of a book entitled The Bonglehead's Guide to Investing. So you can check out, if you enter that in Google, you'll find Mel's book and you can check Mel out. Mel posts regularly at the bogleheads.org discussion board today. And there are many others involved, but these are the two leaders. John Graney's the number one leader. John and I were friends during the years when I was posting about saving, 1999 through early 2002. And then what happened was we had, you know, John founded the board. I gave consideration to starting my own board when I started posting about really saving. I only posted about saving for the first 3 years. But I elected to go to the board. I was a fan of John's. I had known about his site. And I elected to go with his board because I felt it would be more effective to join forces. Rather than to have two separate boards, you know, that would each get half the traffic, it'd be more effective to have one, you know, rock-solid board. And John and I got along well. We were friends. I advertised at his website. He promoted me. You know, he had something there at the board saying that everybody who came to the board, the first thing they should do is read all my posts because they were the key to understanding early retirement, so forth and so on. But, you know, I can't read into people's minds, but something happened. When stocks started to drop in 1990, when did they start to drop? I think they started to drop in 1999. The tech crash, I don't remember exactly the dates. 1999, 2000. John became sort of soured. And I think it was 2000 when they dropped. And then more maybe in 2001. I think that's the way it was. But anyway, you can check the dates of the tech crash. But there was a drop in the S&P, I think, at the time, but not nearly as dramatic. It was prime the tech stocks, the Nasdaq, were wiped out. Huge losses. John became soured and defensive. There were a number of, because this board was so special, we had attracted some amazingly intelligent, you know, smart people. John became extremely defensive that these people were becoming more popular than he was because his stuff is, I would characterize it as get rich quick. He wouldn't characterize it that way, but it was an extremely pro-stock position. It was just put everything in stocks regardless of price. John has said that he was going with a 90% stock allocation. He was recommending people to retire early using a safe withdrawal rate study that gave as the safe withdrawal rate a number that had only a 30% chance of working, according to the historical data. So he was telling people to hand in resignations from high-paying corporate jobs on a retirement plan that only a 1 in 3 chance of working out, according to the historical data. I think it's fair to describe that as get rich quick, but there are many others who feel differently. That is my take. I think it's dangerous. I think John's investing advice is dangerous advice. I don't think it's intentional. I don't think he intentionally is giving bad advice. I think he believes the advice, but I think it's dangerous all the same. Anyway, he became defensive. There were a number of fine posters, and he started to attack these posters, drive them off the board. And at the time I was writing my book on saving, I had gone to the board and we had with these thousands of people, we developed lots of wonderful insights. And then I wrote them up in a book, Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul Satisfying Work. And I was busy writing that book at the time this was going on. And as John would drive away more posters, I became increasingly alarmed that our board community was being destroyed. And so I finally felt that I had to step in. Things got so bad that I felt I had to step in. And, you know, it would have done no good at all to say, please stop the smear campaigns. I mean, obviously, many people had said that to no effect. I had known all along that the weapon that John would use was this safe withdrawal rate study. The safe withdrawal rate study he uses, it's at his website. It's analytically invalid. It includes no adjustment for the effective valuations, the valuations that apply on the day the retirement begins. It's analytically invalid. The valuation level that applies on the day of retirement begins is the most important factor in determining whether your retirement is safe or not. All failed retirements in the historical record come from overinvesting in stocks. I don't want to say all, but virtually all, come from overinvesting in stocks at times of insanely high prices. And this factor is just ignored in John's study. Now, John did not invent the methodology. He took a methodology used by a number of well-credentialed experts. The Trinity Studies, the most famous, uses this methodology. And these studies, these earlier studies, at least the Trinity Study, and I think some others, were peer-reviewed. So John did not, you know, come up with a stupid methodology. He just borrowed a methodology, which he had every reason to believe was legitimate. But it was not. Turned out that that methodology was in error, was flawed, and that's been confirmed beyond any reasonable doubt whatsoever. We've had, John Walter Russell and I have done, John has done statistical tests showing this beyond any doubt whatsoever, and we even have many big name, not many, but we have a number of big name passive investing advocates who have acknowledged that these studies are garbage. That's a quote from Larry Swedrow. He's a, you know, widely known expert post at Bogleheads, and Larry has called the old school studies, the old school safe withdrawal studies, garbage in, garbage out research. He would have no motivation to say that if it were not so. So these studies are indeed invalid. But John did not want people to know that. When I talked, so I decided the only way to stop the attacks was to point out the invalidity of the study. I did that, and the community loved it. The community was very excited, and if you go to the Banned at Motley Fool section of the website, you will see there are articles, and one of them is community comments on the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate, and I include some of the comments there from the early months showing how excited people were. As people got more and more excited, John got more and more upset and determined that the way to bring an end to this was to conduct a campaign of terror against our board community, me in particular, as the leader of this effort to discuss the realities of stock investing, but the whole board community. If there were many people who started threads who were, you know, called out or threatened or intimidated or whatever, or, you know, deceptive posts were put up about them, smear campaigns, all this sort of thing. Now, many people would just say, oh, this kind of thing happens on the internet. Well, that's what this is all about. That's what Take Back the Internet is all about. To the extent that this thing is common on the internet, it's unacceptable. Many lives have been destroyed as a result of this campaign of terror. Thousands of people in the retire early and indexing discussion board communities have used these studies to plan retirements. We know this because they discussed it on the boards. And the odds are they're going to suffer busted retirements if, in the event that stocks perform in the future anything at all as they have always performed in the past. So just looking at our fellow community members, we've done huge damage. But if you take this bigger, if you go to, you know, my goal when I founded the community, I didn't found the board, but I founded the Retire Early community. My goal was to use the internet to develop new insights in the saving and investing fields and then to spread them to all middle-class workers interested in financial freedom. So if we had spread knowledge of the errors in these studies, we wouldn't have saved thousands of busted retirements. We would have saved millions. There are millions of people, because almost all financial planners use these studies to advise us how to set up our retirement plans. So it's a big deal. It never should have happened. It's an ugly, ugly thing, but we simply have to deal with it. Many people are uncomfortable talking about it for somewhat obvious reasons. It's extremely embarrassing. The behavior is just shameful. There's the prospect of litigation. You know, these people have caused people to suffer, you know, great life setbacks, which can be reduced to numbers. You know, you can look at how many hundreds of thousands of dollars people have lost, and millions of them, because of this abusive posting. You know, just obviously abusive posting. We're not talking about close calls. We're not talking about somebody calling somebody a name. You know, we're talking about death threats and smear campaigns that go on for years, trying to destroy people's businesses, you know, all sorts of things. So, well, the problem now, I don't want to read the whole thing, but I'm going to read much of an email that I wrote to my congressman, Representative Frank Wolf of Virginia. And I have this on the website as well. The entire text of the email is at the Banned at Motley Fool section of the website. And I think it gives a good summary. So I'm going to read a good bit of it, not all of it, and then make some comments and some observations and about where we're going to go from here. And the because the reason I want to read the emails, I think it just gives a great overview, you know, that hopefully will not be too lengthy if I cut parts out. So maybe I better just get to the business of reading that. The title of this article is Internet Harassment by, quote, Defenders of the Conventional Retirement Studies. And I have a little intro. I say, set forth below is the text of an email that I sent on August 12th, 2008, so over a year ago now, to my congressman offering an overview of the abusive tactics used to block honest posting, rate the analytical errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, and rate the effect of valuations on long-term stock returns in general. I deleted the name of the aide. I had spoken to an aide in Representative Wolf's office, and I deleted her name. We had a long conversation. The aide was sympathetic. Not a lot has happened in response to this. I spoke to the aide. She suggested I write the email. I wrote this email. She sent it along to Congressman Wolf. Wolf sent me a letter, and in his letter he said he sent the thing along to the FTC. And this was all before the election. And the FTC sent me a letter saying, you know, they're looking at it, but there was no promise of immediate action. So nothing has happened beyond that. But I do believe we're going to have legislation, and I may, there may be some discussion of things that are, I don't recall everything that's in the email, but there may be some discussion of things that are moving forward. And if not, I'll add some comments at the end about where things stand, and both on my part and just, you know, in society. You know, this is an issue that's coming up. It's not just at our website where this is coming up. All right. So name deleted. This is Rob Bennett. We spoke by telephone on Friday afternoon, raised my problems with internet harassment and my request that Congressman Wolf explore possibilities for helping constituents who suffer from this problem who are concerned about the effect it has on the ability of those who do not directly suffer from it to learn about the world around them in the internet age. Thanks for listening to my description of the problem. I have put together this email in response to your request that I supply more background information in written form. I am building a writing business on the internet. My website is, and I have a link, to passionsaving.com. Now, I may skip this because I just told you all this. I began posting on the internet regularly in December 1999. One of the things I did was build a community of aspiring early retirees that met at a Motley Fool discussion board. Then I mentioned that this led to a book, Passion Saving, and I say you can read reviews of the book at this page, and I link to the, there's a section there at my website called The Book I Wrote, where I have reviews and things of that nature. The Motley Fool board became an amazing learning resource. There were tens of thousands of people who used the board to learn things about personal finance that could not be learned by reviewing the material in the most extensive personal finance libraries in the world. And that's all true. I point out that Motley Fool co-founder Tom Gardner wrote a blurb that appears on the back of my book. In May 2002, the board began examining studies that retirement planners use to help people plan their retirements and discovered significant flaws in the existing studies. Then I point out that, you know, in the days since, I have co-developed with John Walter Russell an accurate safe withdrawal rate calculator called a Retirement Risk Evaluator, and I link to that. Then I note that John Graney is the author of one of the flaws studies, and his response to learning of the errors in the studies was to launch a smear campaign against me and all community members who tried to share information about the community's findings. And then I give a link to the Goon Central Board, which is a board founded by Greeney for the sole purpose of intimidating people who post honestly on safe withdrawal rates and related subjects. And Greeney's been running this board for several years, and his goon squad, they meet there, and they when there's posting, say at some place like Vanguard Diehards that is honest and that talks about the realities of investing, he sends his goons out, and they decide on strategies to destroy people's reputations and so forth. Greeney's efforts led to the destruction of the once thriving Motley Fool board. Then I go on, the intimidation is achieved through the vilest means imaginable. I have seen threats to kill me, my wife, and my children. I have seen posts charging falsely that I engage in plagiarism. I have seen posts claiming falsely that my parents were alcoholics. I have seen posts claiming that I stalk women. I have seen posts claiming that my wife has left me. When I have been quoted in newspapers, the goons have sent emails to the reporters who wrote the articles or to their editors making false claims about my financial status. When bloggers report favorably on my writings or my calculators, the goons put forward suggestions that new websites will need to be established to ridicule these people. In cases in which these people do continue to report positively on our community's findings, these threats are carried out. I have had malicious reviews of my book posted at websites and at Amazon.com. The obvious intent of these efforts is to intimidate people. I'm going to skip down. I don't want to take too long on this. The people who fear the intimidation tactics have good reason to do so. If you check my website on the Yahoo search engine, you will see that it is identified as a website that is dangerous because it sends out spam emails. This is, of course, not the case. The goons send out every day emails under my name for the purpose of destroying my reputation. I've received thousands of returned emails that I never sent. And, of course, if I received thousands of returned emails, God knows how many were actually sent. The goons have set up porn sites containing many links to my website in an effort to lead Google and other search engines into believing that my site is associated with such sites, and therefore to hurt my rankings among the personal finance site. My blog has been deluged with abusive posts when I have opened it for non-moderated comments. I have been removed from blog directories when the goons contacted the owners of the directories with, quote, suggestions that removal of my site from their listing should be a priority if the owners of the directories want to remain on the good side of the goons. Then I say, I am a journalist. I possess a strong belief that good information is a public asset. And the best way to help people achieve their life goals is to teach them and to provide means for them to teach each other. I'm going to skip down. I have seen firsthand what can be accomplished on the internet when reasoned and civil discussion is permitted. It is amazing. Then I talk about John Walter Russell's site, which John Walter Russell's site, it is an amazing resource. It's early-retirement-planning-insights.com. And I met John on Motley Fool. I would not know John Russell if it were not for the discussions we had at the Motley Fool site. His entire site would not exist were it not for the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. And my personal view is that John's site is the most important website on the internet today. So that gives you some sense of how powerful this new communications medium is, how important it is that we establish rules that discussions in this new medium be conducted in a civil and reasonable way. I point out that an entire section of the smear site, John's smear site, John Graney's smear site, is aimed at smearing John Russell and his work. Goons follow John wherever he travels on the internet to employ deception, intimidation, and word games to block the efforts of any middle-class investor seeking to learn from him. I go into the personal part a little bit. I say the internet is a personal medium. I have seen friends turn against friends when threats were made, and one friend submitted to demands that he post honestly, and another expressed reluctance to do so. I have seen entire sites that the owners spent years of effort to build burn to the ground because the owners expressed a willingness to permit honest posting. That happened with a friend of mine, ES. ES, that stood for El Supremo. His screen name was a little bit of a joke. And he found it a board that was wonderful, the nofeeboards.com. When Motley Fool started charging fees, ES formed this board. Hugely successful. It had a successful retire early board. It had the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group, which I founded. It had a successful indexing board. It had a fairly successful board on exercise, and there was one on gambling. Wonderful board, wonderful community. The Graney goons became enraged that ES was permitting honest posting, and so they sent their goons over to destroy that board, and that board was burned to the ground. As a result, it exists no more. Then I say, here is an article at my site at which I set forth 101 snippets from posts by community members expressing a desire that honest and civil discussions be permitted at the various retire early and indexing communities. And that post is also at the Banned at Motley Fool section of the site. It's called Investing Discussion Boards Ban Honest Posting on Valuations. So back to my email to Congressman Wolf's aide, really, I wrote the email to. Please do not think that I am exaggerating in my description of the realities of corners of the internet where goon posters have come into dominance. Then I point out that Forbes magazine published an article about this phenomenon as the cover story of its October 15th, 2007 issue, and I provide a link. And Forbes had a wonderful article, and I'm going to give a few quotes from it. Quote, this is a quote from the Forbes article. She died instantly. The pain of her parents and her three younger sisters continues, deepened by a malicious, masked mob on the internet. Gruesome police photos of the carnage, her mangled remains still in the driver's seat, show up online at Google and at more than 1,500 other outposts. In chat rooms and on fetishistic car crash forums, anonymous assailants called Nikki, quote, a spoiled rich girl who, quote, deserved it. This is, the title of my book is Investing for Humans. What I am describing to you, I think you can gather what I'm talking about, what was done to this family. It's subhuman. There's no other, you know, it's subhuman. That anyone would argue that there's a place for this sort of behavior is just beyond my comprehension. I understand different people have different viewpoints, but I'm telling you it's beyond my comprehension. I am just sickened to read this sort of thing. This has nothing to do with safe withdrawal rates, but it's an example. It's a parallel example of the same types of tactics being used for a different purpose. One post urged cohorts to harass her family, providing the, I'm not going to give the name, but Forbes did give the name, giving the family's home address in Ladera Ranch, California. And this is a quote again from Forbes. A backlash has begun, and it could gain support in Congress and in the courts unless the internet industry itself finds new fixes like Linda Ronstadt did. I'm going to read that again. A backlash has begun, and it could gain support in Congress and in the courts unless the internet industry itself finds new fixes. This is what Rob Bennett believes. If people on the internet adopt minimal levels of personal responsibility and step in and do something about this problem, I don't think legislation would necessarily be needed. But if the internet community cannot get its act together, there's going to be legislation, and it's probably going to be more restrictive than it would be if responsible people acted first. Don't tell me that we don't need any restrictions, because all that does is lead to greater restrictions. That is foolish, foolish thinking. Foolish thinking. Liberty must be combined with responsibility. Wild liberty ends up being restricted. Blog owners and site owners should be in favor of responsible restrictions on this ugly, ugly, ugly side of internet communication. Rob Bennett's opinion. Now, this is a very significant thing. The next section, also from Forbes, quote, in Connecticut, two women at Yale are using the auto-admit chat board in district, are suing the auto-admit chat board in district court. They want the identity of, quote, Stanford troll, who started a mean discussion thread, quote, stupid bitch to attend Yale Law, saying that one of the women should be sodomized, had herpes, had a lesbian affair with the admissions dean, and had botched admissions test. Another unknown poster wrote of the second student, quote, I hope she gets raped and dies. Take back the internet, appropriate title. One of the plaintiffs says it prevented her from getting jobs. So in other words, employers now use the internet to determine who to hire, and there were a group of thugs who made sport out of destroying the reputations of these two women for no cause whatsoever. These women had done nothing to these people. They made it a sport. And the owners of these websites let it continue. They're now being sued. I believe this case will go to the Supreme Court. I believe it will set a precedent. The case was taken by an experienced Yale lawyer, Yale graduate lawyer. I spoke to him, and he was sympathetic with my case. I think he's a fine man. I know this is all I know about him, but to take on this case, this is the kind of case that should be, it was taken on pro bono. This is the kind of case that should be taken on pro bono, because this has to stop. And this Yale case, I believe, because of the lawyer they have, I believe will go to the Supreme Court, and it will set a precedent. And I hope it goes the right way. I believe it will go the right way, but we'll see. Again, from Forbes, Timothy O'Reilly, a publisher and one of the web's biggest cheerleaders, now calls for guardrails. Quote from Timothy O'Reilly, the perception right now is that standing up for good things is wussy, but a lot of people want more civility. Put me in that camp, please. Then they talk about a woman who was attacked on the internet named, I think it was Kathy, it's Kathy is her first name. I think it was Kathy Sierra. Kathy Sierra. She had a wonderful blog. It was one of the most popular blogs in the world. She had thousands of readers. And this blog was destroyed because these thugs were jealous of her. She had written a couple books about programming, software code, that were popular. And these thugs, who did not have the ability she possessed, set about the business of destroying her. And they would set up entire websites portraying her children being killed. And this woman felt that she couldn't have these risks to her family, and she shut down her blog. So we all lose. We all lose. Nonprofit enterprise. She didn't earn money from this. I'm not even sure she had advertising at the blog. I don't even think she did. I suppose she sold a few books, but... Quote, the only thing Kathy has to offer is that noose in her neck size, wrote a poster calling himself Joey. If you had told me once upon a time that I would ever have to read words like this onto a podcast, I would have... She contacted the FBI, but never heard from anyone. She has stopped blogging altogether. The blog's vituperative retaliation frightened some victims, such as a corporate recruiter in Malaysia who talked to Forbes but asked to go unnamed in the story. I wonder why. In June, she learned that a blog on Google's Blogspot site was masquerading as hers, claiming she likes micromanaging, throwing tantrums, and being condescending. Quote, I'm part of a global company where reputation is everything, she says. This could be up there forever. She says Google hasn't answered her emails. Quote, freedom of speech like this is wrong. This is cowardly character assassination. It's not freedom of speech. A threat is not freedom of speech. We have there's a long record on this. Crying fire in a crowded theater is not free speech. Threatening to kill somebody is not protected free speech. Destroying someone's reputation is not free speech. It's defamation. It's a tort. And in some cases, with death threats, it's a crime. This idiot idea has caught on that this has something to do with free speech. The purpose is to me, it's self-evident. The purpose is to stop speech. God help us. Quote from Forbes, we were techies. We weren't trying to solve society's ills. I thought this would figure itself out, but it's taking a lot longer than I imagined. Now, here's the key to it all. Quote from Forbes, Congress added a splash of impunity to the mix in 1996 when it passed a pro-internet law, a so-called pro-internet law. That's my editorial comment. Pro-internet law known as the Communications Decency Act. What an irony. Again, that's an editorial comment. Among other provisions, the law insulates electronic middlemen from libel suits. The website that passively furnishes a vehicle for online postings is deemed to be no more responsible for the resulting content than a phone company is for any criminal conversations that take place over its network. Now, in the article here, I start to discuss how the efforts I've taken to deal with the problem. And I mentioned that one big problem is the site administrators fail to act promptly. You see, once highly abusive posting has been permitted for an extended period of time, it becomes part of the culture of the board community. After you've allowed abusive posting for a year, what are you going to do? Step in and say, starting today, we don't allow it? What happened at Motley Fool is we had wonderful posters, and they all left. And the thugs, they were thrilled by this, and they told all their friends. So the culture of the community was destroyed. And I point out that one big problem is the Communications Decency Act. If site owners worried that they would be held responsible for permitting death threats and smear campaigns, they would take on the expense needed to provide at least minimal protections of constructive posters. I checked out the rules for Motley Fool before I ever put up my first post, and the rules were rock solid that this type of behavior would not be permitted. And Motley Fool did not honor its word. Shameful behavior. The Communications Decency Act had created a huge trap for the unwary. I had heard talk about abusive internet posting before I put forward my first post at Motley Fool. Thus, I checked the rules of the site carefully before making a decision to spend any time building up a board community at the site. Building a board community takes a lot of time and hard work. The published rules were rock solid. Motley Fool's promise to protect me from abusive posters was as strong as any on the internet. The promise was comprised of empty words. And I found, I was amazed that was true at Motley Fool. I found it to be true at many other places in the time since. Can it really be, I'm skipping, can it really be that the owners of these businesses, and then I put in parentheses, Motley Fool charged for admission to its board, and most of the other sites profit from advertising, have no responsibilities whatsoever to the people who build their boards? I have devoted years of my life to building some of the most successful boards in the history of the internet, yet I cannot participate at the boards I built. The only reason is that I have been unwilling to post dishonestly about a number that my fellow community's members use to plan their retirement. It is obviously a form of dishonesty to know that a number someone else puts forward is wrong and to say nothing about it. There are big-name experts who participate at some of these boards. Several of the big-name experts, John Bogle, Bill Bernstein, Scott Burns, Larry Swedrow, have indicated agreement with my view that valuations affect long-term returns. Yet these experts have been reluctant to speak up in clear terms in communities in which goon posters are present. No one likes to have his or her reputation destroyed by the sorts of people who make it a sport to destroy reputations on the internet. Motley Fool, Morningstar, and several other boards have banned honest posting on a number that people use to plan their retirements. The likely effect is that millions of people are going to suffer failed retirements in days to come. Can these companies be held financially liable for these irresponsible acts contrary to their own published rules? We're going to see, I imagine, in days to come. Then I discuss the expense of taking on litigation. What is needed is something to restore the balance of power between abusive and non-abusive posters. It is probably 90% of most community members who are there for good purposes. So anything that would give even tiny bits of power to the non-abusive posters could work a dramatic change in how business is conducted on the internet. So that's basically it. Now, in the remaining time, I want to offer some observations. So you see the basic problem. The problem is the one big fact here is that the internet, it's a new thing. The internet discussion board, the internet blog, it's a new communications medium. It is a communications medium of power that very few people recognize today. Very few people appreciate today. Okay? I am a journalist. My background is journalism. So I think that it hit me sooner than it hit many others. Excuse me. All communications media have strengths and minuses. And there are lots of communications media that I love. I love newspapers. Newspapers are going down for the count, but I love them. I love books. There are things that books can teach you that nothing else can teach you. I like speeches. They're not my favorite. I like books more. I like newspapers more, but I like speeches. I like magazines. I like radio, but rarely do I listen to radio. I like television, but rarely do I listen to television. They all have strengths and minuses. The internet discussion board / blog is a new communications medium that has weaknesses, but it has unique power. And I'll run through some of the reasons why. One, of course, it has low barrier to entry. You don't have to, anybody who knows something about a subject can contribute to an internet discussion on a blog or on a discussion board. You don't have to fill out 10,000 forms and, go to school for 15 years. And that is a wonderful thing. Because there are people in our community, I only know the retire early indexing discussion boards. That's pretty much all I know. But there are people in our communities that know things. This was the whole idea of my book, Passion Saving. What I did was I created this community at Motley Fool of the greatest savers in the world. Now, these people didn't have degrees in money management. They're not paid millions of dollars to discuss this stuff, but they know how to do it. They retired at age 40, some of them, or age 50. They know what they're doing. And because at the Motley Fool board, we had a low barrier to entry, we could gain input from these people and learn. And I learned. I learned more. I studied saving. Before I wrote that book, I studied saving. Oh, I started in early, January of 92. And I didn't put the book out until July of 2005. So 13 years. But I learned more in the 3 years on the internet than I learned in the 10 years, you know, not on the internet. And not that I didn't learn things off the internet, but the depth that I achieved, the depth of understanding that I achieved by being able to discuss things with the world's greatest savers adds a depth to my book and a richness to my book that I don't think exists in any other personal finance book on the subject of saving. My opinion, you're entitled to have a different opinion, but that is my take. And there are others who have read it who have said the same thing. I haven't had millions, but I've had people tell me that. I've had more than one. You know, I've had, the number's not in the hundreds today. I haven't sold enough copies, but it's more than 20 who have told me something along those lines. And I hope someday the book will sell in the millions, and we'll see. But the point is, I couldn't have written it without conversations with the most effective savers in the world. And the low barrier to entry on the internet made that possible. So, you know, I couldn't look up what these people told me in a bookstore or in a library. It didn't exist. But it existed on the internet. Two, it's global. You know, a lot of times we're parochial in our thinking. All we know, all I tend to know is the United States. But you hear different about different cultures on the internet. You know, we've had people, you know, all over the world. Commenting on our discussion threads. Three, those with like interest are able to get together without geographic or time obstacles. In other words, our board was all the people interested in early retirement, and you know, you didn't have to meet it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If you were busy at 3 o'clock, you could read the post at 9 o'clock and make your contribution. And it didn't matter. You didn't have to get on a plane and meet in Chicago. You could communicate from Japan, as long as you had internet access. You could communicate from the beach. Four, the internet is conversational. That's how we learn. There's a huge advantage to conversational information. Books are not conversational. I write my books in a fairly conversational tone. But books, as a rule, tend to be formal. Speeches are more conversational than books, but many people just read a text, which sort of defeats the purpose of a speech, in my personal view. I don't believe in that at all. I sometimes have notes, but I never read a speech. Because conversation is how people learn. If you have two people give a speech and one reads a text, you know, written beforehand so it all sounds nice, and the other one speaks from notes, I'll guarantee you, if you did it, I know this is true. I don't know of a study, but I know it's true. If you test it, what the audience learned, they learn more from the conversational talk. Even though it may not be as well organized, even though it may not be as smoothly presented, that's how people hear. That's how people learn. That's how people take information in. And the internet is conversational. And it's a huge, now there are things about it I don't like, you know, sometimes people don't use capitals or, you know, they don't use punctuation or I don't like it when people use obscenities, these sorts of things. But you take the good with the bad. But the conversational speaking helps learning, you know, in a great way. It's powerful. Five, accountability. The accountability on the internet, in theory at least, is through the roof. All conversations are recorded. They're in post archives. This is a wonderful thing because you can go back. I often go back to when I have time, and I go back to old threads and I look at them. Even I just accountability myself, and I say, what did I think about this subject 2 years ago? And I feel like I'm reading the work of a different person because I've learned in 2 years. But of course, you can also have accountability of all the people contributing. And I have always felt this was our ace in the hole, that because I can show that people like Larry Swedrow and Ed Easterling and Scott Burns and William Bernstein have all said that the safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong, that the owner, the authors of these studies would have no choice but to correct them. We have total accountability. But when threats of physical violence are made, people are afraid to speak up. So I say it. I point out. I provide links. And others in the community are afraid to speak up. And so the goons are able to continue to give demonstrably false advice, because nobody will stop them. Because they hold, you know, we have accountability in an intellectual sense, but they have violence on their side. And many people are afraid of these. You know, many people will say, oh, they're not really going to kill you. Well, maybe they're not. I hope they're not. But do you know for sure? Do you know for sure? The type of person who would spend 7 years on a smear campaign is incapable of killing someone because he showed he got the numbers in a study wrong? Are you sure? My wife isn't so sure. My wife has fears for the safety of our children. That shouldn't be. No one should have to live in fear of what's going to happen to his children solely because he reported a number accurately on a discussion board, a number that people use to plan their retirements. That is sick. Sick. I'll stay. Quote me on that, friends and neighbors. Six. Numerous skill sets can all get together. I often talk about how different personalities have different skill sets. They all mix together on the internet. Diversity. Diversity in action. The internet is diversity in action. Except, of course, when you set up smear campaigns to make sure only like-minded people feel free to contribute. Then diversity is out the door. Then you've got groupthink, the opposite of diversity. But if the internet is managed properly, if internet conversations are managed according to the published rules of every site that I've ever participated at, if they are managed in accord with those rules, internet is diversity. And you know, and it's fantastic. It demonstrates, you know, we've heard people talk about diversity. The internet proves it. I can prove it. I have to stop right now because I'll go on and on, but I can give 20 examples of how having different personalities and different life experience mixed together have helped us develop insights about how to save effectively and how to invest effectively. Seven, breaks through institutional barriers. You see, I often talk about the stock selling industry. The stock selling industry isn't going to tell us how stock investing really works. Why? Not because they're bad people, not because they're dumb people, because they've got a vested interest. You don't go to the car selling industry to find out whether you should buy a car or not. Well, you shouldn't be going to the stock selling industry to find out whether you should buy stocks or not. You know, we all have to use a little bit of common sense. There's institutional resistance to having middle-class investors learn the flaws of the passive investing model, which have been publicly known since 1981 when Robert Shiller, Yale professor, published research showing that valuations affect long-term returns. But the stock selling industry, you know, they dominate the books and they dominate the magazines because you've got to have advertising, and the advertising all comes from the stock selling industry. But they don't dominate the internet unless we let them. So the internet can break through the institutional barriers that hold back knowledge for decades. It's been 3 decades now since Shiller published his research. And the stock selling industry has been holding back this knowledge. But the internet allows us to break through. If we can persuade the owners of the websites to enforce their published rules in a reasonable manner. Number eight, lack of credentials, not an issue. I got to that a little bit before when I discussed low barriers to entry, but you know, we get input from people, they don't have to go to school. And one of the problems in the investing area is that going to school is a negative. The people who are thought of as experts are people who went to investing school, but in investing school, they've been teaching the efficient market theory for years now. And the efficient market theory is the whole problem. So going to school is actually a negative in this case, because you tend to believe it. After you've learned it and you spent years studying it, you know, it affects your mind. It's cognitive dissonance. But we have contributions from people who never bought into any of that stuff. They never went to school. They can take a fresh look, and that helps us all learn. Experts can participate. We have had feedback from people like Bill Bernstein and Scott Burns and Michael Kitsis and Bill Bangin and John Bogle and on and on and on. Bill Schulfeis. I never would have had a chance to communicate with people like John Bogle before the internet, but I have it now. And not just me, all of us have it. So when we come up with findings together as a community and we take it to these experts, we can have we can teach the experts. You know, is that cool? And 10, it's fun. The internet's a more fun medium than reading a book. And that means people will participate that otherwise wouldn't. I mean, it's just a reality. Now, the internet has weaknesses. I've talked about the pluses. It has weaknesses. One, abusive posting frightens away people of intelligence and integrity. I discussed that in the email to Congressman Wolf. Two, anonymity lowers the bar on behavior. People will behave in ways when people don't know their names that they will not behave when people do know their names. That was the focus of the Forbes article. Three, this is a big one that not many people think about. There's great defensiveness because of the accountability. You see, the internet has exceptional levels of accountability. But in human life, a reaction often causes a development often causes a reaction. Well, the reaction we've seen to the greater accountability on the internet is greater defensiveness. People who put things forward don't want to be questioned. And they know that there's thousands of people out there possibly smarter than them, and none of us know it all, do we? None of us know it all, do we? When a John Bogle appears, John Bogle is my hero. But John Bogle doesn't know it all. John Bogle has one set of life experiences. You know, John Walter Russell has a different set. Robert Shiller has a different set. Bill Bernstein has a different set. Rob Bennett has a different set. John Bogle can be questioned on the internet. And look, if he's open, he can learn. He can learn things he never could have learned before. But if he's the defensive type, and I'm not saying one way or the other, but some of these people are the defensive type. John Graney is the defensive type. Mel Lindauer is the defensive type. If you are of that type, you're going to have a problem on the internet. This is a downside because you're scared. You're scared of what people are going to... In other words, human jealousy has always been a factor in all communication. But now, you know, you can't even, you know, you can't lie about what you said because there's a post archive. This is sort of a downside. The internet is a defensive medium by nature. Now, there's a way to address this. The way to address this is let people know that there are post archives and it can cause people to be more careful, which is good. That's what we want. But once you allow goon squads to rule the day, the carefulness goes out the window. The thought is, I don't need to be careful. I got a goon squad. Maybe you need to be careful. I never even thought of getting a goon squad. Didn't know I needed one. And I'm not going to get one now because it repulses me. It's against everything I believe in. Four, expert advice can be challenged. See, I think this is wonderful. The big thing that I've been hit on in all these discussions, all these smear campaigns is, how dare you? How dare you? Some guy who posts on the internet point out that these peer-reviewed studies, the methodology is flawed. How dare you? Well, I'm helping people, aren't I? There's two possibilities that can result when I point out an error in a retirement study. One, someone could find that I'm wrong. And in that case, confidence in the original study is strengthened because it was tested, it was challenged, and it survived the test. A good thing. The second thing is we could confirm that the study is indeed flawed, in which case the study should be replaced. That's also a good thing. So there's no downside to me questioning an expert or anyone else. Doesn't have to be me. So this is a wonderful thing, but I think it'd be fair to say some of the quote-unquote experts don't view it as so wonderful today. Well, we need to change their thinking. And, you know, I don't mean in a harsh way, in a loving way, but if we're going to use the internet communications medium to advance human knowledge, this has to be done. It's a new world. It's a new world. And the old rules about once you're an expert, you're always an expert may not hold. Maybe you're going to have to work a little harder to stay on top. Okay? You're not the only one facing that in this modern era. But you know, smear campaigns are not the answer. Five, friendship translates into emotion. The internet is a medium where a lot of people become friends. You know, people form friendships. That translates into emotion. Now, I love it that people become friends. I'm sort of a emotional. I mean, I don't want to say I'm an emotional guy exactly, but I don't know, maybe that's right. I care more about feelings than I do. I care about ideas greatly. I don't want to say I care more about feelings than I do about ideas, but how can I put it? I'm an informal guy, and I believe you learn by seeing how things affect human beings. I don't care about book learning. Doesn't really impress me. When a book is written that describes something well, yes, I'm impressed. Yes, but what I really care about is when somebody takes it into the real world and adds some flesh and blood to it. That's what excites me. And the internet is my medium because that's it's all about that. And I thrived on that. You know, the years before the smear campaigns, I was the most popular poster at the Motley Fool site. I thrive on it. I just love it. I love that give and take. But it does mean that, you know, when you're questioning someone's study, that person has friends. And John Graney had a lot of friends. People get uncomfortable. Now, I will say, I bent over backwards not to do that. I always was kind on the issue of the study. I never ridiculed John for getting the number wrong, anything like that. I've ridiculed him for the smear campaigns, but never for the substantive mistakes, because I just don't think it would be right. But I can see, you know, part of the issue we're dealing with is that people feel, oh, you're hurting my friend. When you give accurate retirement numbers, you're hurting my friend. This is something we have to think about in reforming the internet. And that's what this is about. That's what Take Back the Internet is about. Six, old rules that have been worked out over centuries don't apply because the internet is newly invented. Things like defamation, there's a reason why we have laws about defamation. Things like threats of physical violence, there's a reason why we have laws about that stuff. Things about destroying somebody's business, there's a reason why we have rules about that stuff. But the internet came along and they just said, well, we don't need these rules. You know, we're libertarian, we don't need any rules. Well, you can't run a society without rules. It's foolish. It's foolish. As I say, if we don't start thinking about what the rules should be, we're going to have a heavy hand come down on us. People on the internet better get with it. This is foolish behavior. It's better if people on the internet come up with the rules than if it has to be done by outsiders. But the internet is where the nation conducts its business today. It can't be run by thugs. You know, the thugs took over when the internet was born for whatever reasons. There are complicated historical reasons. You know, basically, the standards were just low and nobody cared because most people weren't on the internet. And once they established these standards, you know, they sort of feel like they don't want the rules changed. There's inertia. But 90% of the people on the internet today don't like this stuff. So it's gonna have to change. Seven, the Community Decency Act is just tragic. I mean, it's just tragic. It's just a disaster. This idea that the owners of sites have no responsibilities. Now, you know, I think the reason those provisions were adopted was the owner of a website shouldn't have to worry. You know, if some idiot puts up a comment at my blog and I don't happen to see it and it defames somebody, I shouldn't be held liable for that. That was the intent, I believe, of that law. And that makes sense. But that's not what we're dealing with in the case of the campaign of terror against the Retire Early and Indexing discussion boards. I contacted Motley Fool. I told them about the death threats. I contacted Morningstar. I told them about the death threats. So they know. They have links. And they didn't act. Because the people making the death threats were popular. They were popular because they're promoting get-rich-quick schemes. But the rules of the site don't say, you know, you must conduct yourself in such a way unless you're promoting a get-rich-quick scheme in which all the rules go out the window. You can do whatever the heck you please. If they had said that, I never would have put my good name on post appearing at these boards. And not the others wouldn't have either. Thousands of others who built these boards. Eight. The sites are looking for money. The primary focus of the site seems to be money. And, you know, to some extent, that's what you would expect. They're businesses. They have to make money. But you have to care about your customers. In other words, you know, you don't open a store and have people come in and then have thugs, you know, pulling knives on your customers and just say, oh, well, that's, you know, too bad, you know. You got to do something. You've got responsibilities. The thugs are using the thing you built to destroy people. And you have responsibilities. Communications Decency Act has to be reformed. Rob Bennett's opinion. Nine, because message boards are cheap, they are disparaged, they get no respect. You tell the problems to people, and often the reaction you get is, oh, well, that's the internet. Well, that's wrong. The internet is the future. The internet is as important a learning medium today as books or speeches or television or radio, in Rob Bennett's opinion. This is where we're going to learn, and we can't learn. Obviously, there are things being learned on the internet, wonderful things. But this limits us it limits us in a great way. It pains me to think. I mean, we've learned amazing things in these 7 years. But when I think of how much farther we would be if it hadn't been for these abusive posts, it makes me want to cry. We could have 100 websites over the internet exploring valuation-informed indexing, rational investing, passion saving. It's just, I can't stand to think about it. It's just too painful. So we're living in a time of great potential, but great vulnerability. 10, links require doing the popular thing. You see, the whole internet is built on links. And what you see with a lot of blog owners is they sort of like the First Amendment. They sort of want to protect free speech, but they don't want to do anything to affect getting links from the in-group. And the in-group is pushing passive investing. And so, well, if we have to ban honest posting, well, I guess I can live. Yeah. Everybody likes the First Amendment until they're faced, you know, with having to put something on the line to protect it. First Amendment is something you have to be willing to, you know, it's where everything comes from. Without free speech, nothing we do matters. Bloggers and site owners. If you won't stand up for the First Amendment when these thugs are out to destroy it, in my opinion, you haven't earned the right. There was a guy, the Monivator blog, and he was a good guy. We had a good back and forth, but one quote he said, you know, sort of sent me. He said, it's not my fight. And I felt like saying, whose fight is it? You've got a blog. He believes in passive investing. That's why he says it's not my fight. But it doesn't matter. He should want free speech. Because that's how he learns. He may like passive investing today. He may not like it tomorrow. He should always favor the First Amendment because that's the business he's in, even if he's just doing it for fun, and I think he is. But even if you're just doing it for fun, the fun goes out of it when you see these sick, twisted smear campaigns. So, we've got a mess today. I mean, we've seen some of the ugliest stuff I've ever seen. As I say, the hardest part to take is the friendship stuff. I mean, there were wonderful, wonderful people in our board community who they were threatened and they felt they had to back down. I think of this guy, radiology doctor, and he radiology doctor helped me in the days when I was questioning the safe withdrawal rate studies, and I wasn't 100% sure. A radiology doctor was doing original research. He wasn't just giving opinions. He was doing original research, like what John Walter Russell does. Now, John Walter Russell's done 1,000 times more, but radiology did some significant research back at the fire board at the nofeeboards.com site. And the threats came out, and radiology doctor went back and doctored his research, changed it, without adding any notes, without saying, you know, this was changed because of a threat to kill me if I posted honestly. So it's degrading. It's degrading. And for friends to turn on friends is degrading. And it's degrading for the goons. Think of the goons. You know, forget all the good people. I care about the good people. But let's just talk about the goons. And I've said this. I say it all the time. I say John Graney is my friend. And that's just, you know, people, the goons don't like it. But I don't care. I had good times with the man for 3 years, and I don't forget. So I will stand up to him. I'll call him a goon. I'll do what I have to do to stop him. I put forward a post to have him removed from Motley Fool. I'll do that because I have a responsibility to do that. I have a responsibility to my fellow community members, but it doesn't mean I don't care. And Graney, I don't even want to think how he feels. To have people know that you've engaged in such low behavior for years, how would you feel? Now, you can say, oh, it's his fault. Well, it is his fault. Nobody held a gun to his head. But look, all humans are weak. You know, have you never done anything wrong in your life? The more temptation we offer, the more bad behavior we're going to see. I have said from the first day, if Motley Fool had stepped in early on when the abusive posting started and said, John Graney suspended for 2 weeks. You know, this is unacceptable behavior. He would have gotten it together. He would have corrected the study. He would have stopped the abusive posting, because he enjoyed participating in that board community. But what it was he started with little things, and when he saw he could get away with it, and when he saw there were people that were going to applaud him, and when he saw that Motley Fool was going to look the other way, he got worse and worse and worse. And then you reach a point where you look around, and you have Larry Swedrow saying it's garbage in, garbage out research, and you can't admit it. Because you've destroyed entire discussion board communities. You've got that on your record. And you can never admit it. That's the situation John is in. And Mel is in. And many others who posted a defense of these two. And it shouldn't be. And blog owners. Doing the same thing. In other words, it spreads and spreads and spreads. It's like a cancer. It's been a cancer for 7 years. Now we have big name. We've got, obviously, Motley Fool involved. We've got Morningstar. These are big names in the personal finance field. We've got John Bogle involved. Has John Bogle ever posted a death threat? No. Thank God for small favors, I suppose. The idea is preposterous. But after things I've seen, what isn't possible? But no. The answer is no. But has John Bogle tolerated it? He lends his name to the Vanguard diehards. Vanguard is John Bogle's company. And Bogleheads, his name is right in the title. So he lends his name. John Bogle appears at the annual conference of the Bogleheads. And Mel Lindauer is there on the stage with him. And they're joking about the chicken served at lunch. What does that say about John Bogle? We have to have the internet. We have to be able to share information on the internet to advance our goals, the goals of our community, retire early community, and indexing community. So we have to have the internet opened up to honest posting. And these people can't bear it because, their prior behavior haunts them. So this has to be addressed. And anyway, we'll see. But I believe the law, the case going through the courts that was mentioned to the Yale law students, I believe that's going to set the precedent. But I don't know how long that's going to take. I don't know that we're going to be able to wait for that. I think we're going to have to organize effort on the internet. I've tried, you know, I spoke at the, or I posted at the Money Bloggers Network. Bloggers should be united on this. And so I think that may be the way to go to organize blogging communities, that we're going to stand up to this. They deleted that thread. They're scared. Either they're scared of the goons, or some of them I know have engaged in this behavior themselves. They're embarrassed. They're ashamed. Some of them, they believe in passive investing, and so they diminish it. They say, oh, it's not a big deal. After all, they're, you know, yeah, sure, death threats, sure, but hey, they're promoting my investing strategy. I sort of like that. Well, doesn't matter what they're promoting. It matters how they are promoting it. We all have an interest in the work done at bogleheads.org. It's an important board community. There's smart people there. We need people there to feel that they can post honestly and freely, openly. They should be sharing the work we've done over the past 7 years, sharing the stock return predictor and the retirement risk evaluator and the scenario surfer and the investment strategy tester. Those calculators were developed not for only people at PassionSaving.com. They were developed for the entire Retire Early community, the entire indexing discussion board community, the entire personal finance blogosphere, the entire internet, the entire country, the entire world, the entire universe. Same high here. You know, this is for everybody. And that's the beauty. That's the beauty of the internet. You communicate with your fellow community members, you learn some stuff, and you share it with everybody. It's a give and a give back. But all of that is ruined when violence enters the picture. Violence is not free speech. Give me a break. I'm a journalist. I know free speech when I see it. And violence ain't it. Violence is the opposite of free speech. Filling people with fear so that they won't point out mistakes you've made is not free speech. No. No. So, as I say, you know, there'll be further developments. You know, over time, I'm going to be pursuing this, but I think the investing stuff takes front, you know, is more important. We've got the, you know, so I feel like I've got the weight of the world on my shoulders. The investing stuff is going to determine whether our economy collapses, and we're seeing weaknesses in our political system because of the damage done to the economy through the promotion of passive investing. And now on top of it, I got to save the internet. I'm just some guy who posts on the internet. What to do? I believe, I guess the last thing I want to say is, as we move forward, there's potentially bad stuff here. Lawsuits. I've spoken with lawyers. And ultimately, there's a good chance this is going to end in litigation. I wish it wasn't so, but if it, you know, as we proceed, I always say there has to be honesty, there has to be courage, we have to gain the ability to give. We certainly, people who support passive investing always have the right to speak, but those who don't believe in passive investing also have the right to speak. That is non-negotiable. No one can be intimidated into posting dishonestly on the internet. I mean, as a fact, they can, but not properly. They should not. That should not be possible. But we do need to proceed in a spirit of love. If we proceed in a spirit of, you know, retribution, it's wrong. It's wrong. We'll hurt ourselves. Because for all kinds of reasons, and I won't go into it, but that ain't the way. So I guess what I will say is, you know, I invite people to get involved. I invite people to share stories. I want people to share stories about how they have been hurt by abusive posting on the internet. Because that's how we unite. That's how we find out about each other. Take back the internet. The whole idea of that saying was, women should not be afraid to, you know, to walk freely at night, you know, from sexual predators. They should feel freedom is feeling safe. I know, you know, I've had some posts recently where I have said just what I believe on investing, and it's such a good feeling, because for years, even when I was trying to post honestly, I would hold things back out of fear of the attacks that would be levied at me. And it's a wrong thing. I'm not serving myself, and I'm not serving my readers when I do that. And of course, it's sick even for the goons that they would want that. They have to learn that's not something to want. And so we need to reach a point where we speak freely, where we speak openly, where we speak without apology. We certainly should always show respect and affection for those with other viewpoints. It should go without saying. But we must speak freely. We must speak honestly. We must speak openly. And I think that day will come. I think it'll be a wonderful day. I had been working under the impression when I put forward my first post that that's where we were in May of 1999. The joke was on me. But when I see what we can achieve when we allow that, it's an awesome thing. And I look forward to that day. I hope that I am able to play a part in bringing that day on. And as I say, I think in order to bring that day on, I am going to have to be non-negotiable on the question of posting honestly. There can't be any give. We lose our human dignity. We become slaves. You know, slavery was taking away people's physical bodies, you know, their physical control over their physical bodies. The new form of slavery that we're experiencing today on the internet is people taking away your freedom to think for yourself. You have to live in fear of thugs, that you don't offend them. That's a different form of slavery. It's a modern day form of slavery. And I oppose it. And I will say that not with apology, but with pride. I have stuck up for my fellow community members all down the line. I will continue to do so. You know, unless they actually do kill me. I hope I don't put any ideas in their head, but that's what it would take, because it's so deeply wrong to post dishonestly on the numbers people use to plan their retirements. It is so deeply wrong. I will not use my life energy in such an endeavor. But I hope, I pray that I will always respond in love, even if it means, you know, if it's bringing a lawsuit, I'm going to be bringing a lawsuit in a spirit of love. That's the, you know, if you think that's crazy, well, you think I'm crazy, but if I start to feel feelings of hate, the goons have won. I didn't post on the internet. I didn't post my first post on Motley Fool in a spirit of hate, and I don't want to post my next post on Motley Fool, and I believe I'll be posting there again in days to come. I don't want that post to be in a spirit of hate any more than the first one was. My goal is to circle back, reform the internet so that the internet becomes what I thought it was when I first posted there. And what I saw it be for a time, before the safe withdrawal rate issue came up, it was a loving spirit that we had at that Retire Early Board. Those post archives still exist, and you can go back and look at them, and you can see. You can see the feeling that people had for each other. You can see the accomplishments that we achieved together. Learning together. That was the motto of the Motley Fool Board. That's a motto that means something to Rob Bennett. And I hope I can persuade you to have it mean something for you. I think it means something for a lot of people out there. A lot of people. And I hope those people will become better protected and more influential on the internet in days to come. And if they do, boy, are we ever going to learn a lot about how to save effectively, how to invest effectively, and how to manage our careers effectively. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.